Hello, welcome back to another episode of Seeking Scale. Yes, this is for real. We are back on the mic. I'm Craig Hewitt with Andy Baldacci. Andy, it has been a long time since we've talked, man.
Yeah, well, you and I.
For the podcast.
Yeah. It's like welcome back, I almost feel like is underselling it because it's like it's been so long. But yeah, I am happy to kind of restart some of these conversations. But like we were saying before, I mean, I think for me, we were at a spot where I had a newborn and it was like entering the busy season with SaberSim, and it just got to be a lot. And we're at, I feel like mentally I'm at like a better place now, and it's easier to have these conversations, I think, without just like feeling like it's another obligation on the list. And it's something that I don't want to have to like, oh shit, I got to set aside the time for this. It's like, I want to enjoy doing it. And I just wasn't at a spot with everything going on where I really could do that. And I feel like now it's back. It's not going to be a weekly thing. We're not going to set a cadence to it. It'll just be sort of seeing if there are things we want to talk about. And if not,
I think the plan is, yeah, there's no plan except for when something pops up on Twitter that makes one of us irate and we can't, what was your comment? I can't keep working before I talk about this. So we need to do a podcast episode.
Yeah. Now that you brought it up, it's like, I just got to get into it. But
let's give some updates on kind of what's new with
you're
us
holding me back
and I'll hold you back and let you stew on it a little bit. But no, I mean, just to put a point on it, I think, yeah, the show is obviously not dead, but I think it's a good lesson for everyone is like, you can have a podcast that is not out every week or every other week. And it is just kind of whenever, because it's cool and hopefully valuable for, I think, Andy and I to kind of share what's going on with us. And we'll do that when we want, I guess, is the selfish way to look at it.
Yeah.
But I hope that's cool with everybody. And like, I'm thrilled to be able to chat again and kind of share updates on kind of where we are and what's going on in our world.
Yeah. So how's everything going in your world?
Yeah, man, really good. I think the two big things for me are we had our team retreat. We went to Athens, not Georgia, Greece, for a week. About half of us went for a week. The rest went for about 4 or 5 days. We went to Athens because WordCamp Europe is there. So WordCamp is a big kind of conference in the WordPress space. And we had been to it 3 years ago before the pandemic, 4 years ago before the pandemic. It was a really good place for us to go to kind of participate and show our face. We participated in Contributor Day. So a cool way to kind of give back to the WordPress community. And all 9 team members were able to make the retreat. So we did kind of 2 full days before WordCamp and everybody made it. And it was amazing. It was just super amazing. I wrote a blog post on my site about kind of how I felt about it and what we did and everything. So like if folks want to really get into like the meat of it, you can go check it out. But that was amazing. That was the first week of June and like really had, you know, like several days leading up to it and several days afterwards, just like decompressing and trying to figure out reality again. But it was awesome, man. We got a ton of shit.
Ballpark, what did it cost?
Yeah, it cost about $25,000.
Okay. Which it's a little less than I was thinking, but it's still a lot. And it's like that's kind of been, we've been thinking about doing it, and it was much easier when we were smaller. Not that we're big now, but it's, I think we were 16 full time. But when it was like 4, 5, 6 of us, whenever there would be a big DFS event, whether it was like the baseball or football or basketball championships, it would be easier to kind of get at least some of them together. And then like over the year, everyone would have met at different times, not all at once. And that was sort of like good enough. But now I definitely am thinking more about it, but it's also hard where I have a 1-year-old at home and a lot of our team have young kids too. So it's just like navigating all of that, but it's something on the radar, and then the cost is definitely a thought as well, but totally worth it, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, totally worth it, both in like things we actually did and just kind of setting setting ourselves up for success. You know, a bunch of strategic planning and OKRs and talking about the product roadmap and all those things that, like, I mean, frankly, just like would have taken weeks to get done, and we did them in 2 days. So from a perspective, like, just a really efficient use of time. But yeah, I mean, the price is definitely not nothing, and feel good that we're able to swing it financially. So definitely fun, definitely kind of a big deal, but super glad we did it.
Awesome. Yeah, on our end, it's really, we're recording this, oh, I'm assuming it's going to go up pretty soon, but yeah, mid-July, and it's gearing up for football. We've been doing a redesign of the app. It's more of like a refactor, where it's just taking all the learnings we've had and trying to streamline the workflow a bit. And as part of that, we are releasing a big feature that will be on a new tier that's going to be more than twice our highest cost plan right now. So that actually is going to go out into beta today as we're recording.
Releasing on a Friday. I'm excited
about that. Yeah.
Pretty ballsy.
Yeah. I mean, it's beta. It's a close beta. If it doesn't work for people, they can just go to the normal one. We wouldn't push. We don't push to the main production app, obviously, on a Friday. We've learned that. But with this, we just want to get it out there as soon as we can. But yeah, it's just been getting better at delegating. And that's something that I've kind of talked about for a long time here. And I feel like finally making more progress there. And it's still just hard for me to give up control of a lot of things, but it's more and more important to me. And it's easier just like, all right, like, instead of saying, because I would always go through phases where it was like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'll do this. And then when we had Pierce, it was like, yeah, I'm probably not going to do this. So it would be easier to hand it over. And now that, like, my schedule's back to normal, it was, okay, if I don't do this by this date, just get something out there. And now it's more like,
you mean like, no, if someone's submitting work to you for you to review or something, say like, I'm not going to be the blocker. If I want to be involved, I'll let you know. Otherwise, proceed.
It was more like, I was like, okay, for the core sort of like pitch videos and like the, not the content that goes out, it's more like the evergreen, more conversion oriented content. It was like, I want to write this and then record it. And then it would be, that stuff I'm just good at, but really slow. And then it just wouldn't get done. I'd always procrastinate on it, and then we wouldn't make progress. And so I finally had to be like, okay, like, go for it. I'll give some feedback. And I was still kind of a bottleneck, but that got better. And now I'm just like, okay, you're going to go for it. If I don't give you feedback by the next day, just release it. Like, that's fine. Just update the site with it. And it shouldn't be this hard, but for me it is. But I feel like I'm getting there. And I think that people that I'm working closest with, like, appreciate that. Like, I am giving them more autonomy for sure. And sometimes it's just hard to even realize when I think a lot of people who listen can relate. It's like when in the early days, it's like you are doing everything. And there are certain things in the business that, like, we all just have been doing for years that I don't even think about. And it's like, oh, wait, yeah, no, like, someone else can do this. I don't need to be doing this, or I might not even be the best one to do this. But you just don't think about it until it was like working with a designer, and it's like, I don't need to be coordinating this. And not only that, but like, I shouldn't be, like, I'm putting myself in here as a middleman when we have a head of product who is working with a front end team and everything else. Like, I will give Scott my feedback, and like, I want to shape the direction, but once I'm confident we're on the same page, like, no, I just need to get out of that process. And so making progress there, feeling pretty good. And I think that for me, at least, the rest of this year is going to be taking this further so that I can step outside of the day-to-day and just get better systems in place and just really let everyone do what they do best.
Yeah. If I hear what you're saying, it sounds like two, like, amazing things, right? Is like setting the vision and communicating that to Scott for product or kind of whoever. And then, like, I think the challenge sometimes for me, at least, with that is like, okay, if you've created the vision, communicated it to someone else, and they're able to go run with it. What's the feedback loop back to you of like, okay, we did the thing, here are the metrics, or here's how it went, or blah, 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 blah. Like, are you at that point where you're out of the loop until some other point in the future?
It depends on what it is. And it's like with design, what was the working genius or the thing you told me about?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did that. And then Jordan, who's our head of education, basically like kind of the lead marketer under me. And then Madison, who's my executive assistant, like we all did it. And it was just like kind of interesting to better understand how people think in it. And it's, I can't even remember the exact scores, but what I realized is like, I think taste was like very high for me. And I do feel like I have a good eye for design, not just from like a stylistic standpoint, but from UX standpoint. And that attention to detail, I think, is valuable. But I'm not a designer. I shouldn't be doing the wireframes. I shouldn't be doing all of this other stuff. It's like, I'll give some feedback and help shape it. And I do want to be part of that polishing part, even if it's not necessary. It's just still like, that's what I'm going to do. But it was just kind of realizing like, okay, this is the part that is most important to me, not all these other things. I was just kind of creating this monolithic project when it's like, no, just a few parts along the way should I kind of interject in. And I think one of the other things that's been helpful to an extent is just getting a better idea of the times to just like not give a shit about like the way things should be done or whatever else, because it's easy to, if you listen to a lot of people who've built bigger businesses or own multiple businesses, whatever else, it's like you've got to remove yourself entirely. And if that is the goal, is to just be completely checked out, then yeah, obviously you can't be doing things day to day. But at the scale we are, and knowing we are in a niche business, we are looking to expand that, but still like there is a ceiling. It doesn't make sense to try to like hire for things that I do well and that I enjoy doing. It's making sure that I truly am spending my time on those things and not more than that. But like, no, I'm going to be involved strategically on the marketing side. Like that's going to be my role. I don't need to hire someone to do that. And just being okay with that has helped a lot. I've just been like, yeah, like this is still my job. I'm not trying to just be an absentee owner.
I think as I reflect on kind of the last 18 months for us, I tried to remove myself from the day-to-day too much. And
right.
Like, that's what arguably I'm, yeah. Like wasn't adding value at a point. You know, I remember, I think you and I saying, or maybe me and Dave, I said like, I don't have a job anymore. And like, I went through a pretty big like existential crisis with like, what am I doing? How am I adding value? And I think like, you know, we're 9 people now. We were more at the time. And I was lying to myself, right? Like that ain't a big enough company for me to not have a job still. Like, and we didn't have enough revenue to sustain that obviously and everything. So like, yeah, I think I prematurely optimized for that, is what I'll say. And sounds like you're not, which is great.
Well, I was. I was definitely like on the same path. And I don't think I got there because I was involved in so many things by just like micromanaging for so long. But it was sort of in the back of my mind of trying to get to the spot where I didn't have the day-to-day job. And I didn't get there, but it honestly just created a ton of stress of just like feeling bad about spending time on these different things when it's just like, fuck that. Like, no, like I'm going to do these things. And it's like, I do need to continue handing things off and especially empowering the team and giving them more autonomy in the areas that really are in their domain. But that doesn't mean like I'm checking out. I can't hold back much longer on the Twitter stuff.
Let's do it, man. So the thread was something to be akin of 1 $5 million a year business or 5 $1 million a year businesses.
Thousands, I think that whatever. Would be better. I still would have my similar thoughts. But what it was $1 million a year SaaS or 5 $100K a year SaaS. So it was like 5 that didn't add up to the size of the big one.
Okay. So yeah, Damon Chen. Okay.
And so
yeah,
that single app
with
insane.
A million a year, five apps, 100,000 ARR each.
Yeah. It like it broke my brain when I was like, wait, am I reading this right? Because it just makes zero sense. And I think if it was at that scale, if it was 200K versus 1 million, I still would feel basically the same. The fact that it's like not even, they don't even add up to the same amount of revenue and absolutely would not add up to the same amount of profit. The 1 million would be more likely to have more profit than the smaller ones. Just like, it just made no sense. And I think a SaaS, like fundamentally a SaaS doing 100K a year is barely a business. And this isn't meant to be like a knock. Like we were at that point, but it's barely a business in terms of like the enduring quality of it. It's super risky. And I just remember the stress that comes along with that, because truly a few things going wrong could tank the business, and you don't have money to hire anyone to help. So it's all on you. And I think I definitely have, by gambling professionally for over a decade, like I think about risk differently than most, but I think people find an irrational comfort in diversification for its own sake when without thinking about like, is this really diversifying? And if it is diversifying, is it making it safer? Is it making it more stable? Is it lowering volatility? And in this, it's absolutely not safer. Like they are five tiny companies is not better than one small company. And broadly speaking, I think people should look to diversify passive investments and ruthlessly focus on the things that give them their edge. And if you are actively involved in a business, that should be your focus. Otherwise, you're just really just fighting power laws. And I think people do this. I do it, but like I'm trying to be more mindful of it. But I think this is one of the biggest impediments people have to growth is in some ways fighting power laws. And so like say it is those 500K businesses. One of those will guaranteed have four or more times the potential of the others. But it's not as though just like it's always going to be immediately obvious. And if you are focusing on all five, you are not going to necessarily like have the bandwidth to actually see that potential, to actually unlock that potential. And the problem is that like when you are trying to manage that many different things, you are inevitably going to spend most of your time on the worst businesses, on the biggest, the squeakiest wheels effectively. And that is the opposite of what you should do if you want to maximize the expected value. And it goes back to like doubling down on what works. And sure, you could ignore the businesses causing the most problems, but especially at that scale, they're not going to survive without active management. And that's the thing that I think people really don't understand at that scale. When I say it's like not a business, it's you holding it all together. And that's a shitty job. And that's what it is. It's a job. And if you don't hold it together, it will fall apart. And you holding all these things together is you are leaving so much money on the table by not focusing on what's working. Even if we ignore the fact that it's like those five businesses add up to half the revenue of the bigger one, like, which is just ridiculous. But
yeah,
that's not actually diversifying. That those other businesses are liabilities at that point. They are absolutely holding you back. And I think going further, it's not even that you should focus on a single business, but it's that you should focus within that business. And I think this is where it's very easy to get off track here, and not just the idea of focusing. I think a lot of people embody that decently, but I think they focus on the wrong thing. And it's whether it's churn, and this is like basically like a heretical opinion, but like I think people are way too focused on churn, on copywriting, on all these other things, because the more effort you have to spend to convince someone to buy or to stay, the less likely they are to be a good customer. Like if you, especially if you're a B2B, if you are in, I'm trying to think, but like if I have to convince you that you need my tool, how easy is it going to be for you to just like see some other shiny object and be like, oh, I don't really need this. How motivated are you going to be to actually use it to its fullest extent? How likely are you to get that value? And it's not that you should ignore those things, but I think as far as like copywriting goes, and I struggle with this on the copywriting because I'll obsess over like every word, but it's like once you clear some minimum threshold of clarity, so people get what it is that you do, and assuming you've done good research on positioning and everything else, that like you are speaking to the right people about the right problem in the right way, which is more than most do. It's like you got to do that, and what once you do that, you everything else at best has very quickly diminishing returns. And in order to make that reality, you need to focus on finding and upselling those best fits. And that will make you dramatically more money than figuring out the right offer, discount to offer when someone cancels. And it's like, I am a customer of Churnkey. I think I know it's a tiny seed company. They do some, I don't love the way they present things in the dashboard of saying like, if someone clicked cancel and then didn't cancel, that is recovered revenue because it was that's just ridiculous. Like the presence of the cancellation flow will have some impact on churn just by having it there. But to count that as like recovered, I think is just like not a good faith way of doing it. But beyond that, having the right offers, having all these other things for the people who are telling you, I don't want to stick around, that's, you're just improving things at the margins. Like you cannot send the right email at the right time to 10x your business. It's like, if you get this person to stick around, they may stay for a bit, but they're not going to stay forever. And they're just from like a Bayesian perspective, their priors have shown you, hey, I'm not a good customer. I am having doubts about this. Don't spend all your fucking effort on the people who are having doubts. Spend that effort on the people who are like, hey, I want to do more with this. I'm in here every day. Like, I love this. Like, what else can I do? It's like, solve those problems. And I think it's just so easy to get obsessed over these other things without thinking about like, wait a second, like, is this really making a difference?
Yeah.
So end of rant, at least for now.
Feel better now? No, I mean, I agree kind of across the board, right? I mean, I think, yeah, like the thing about diversification is I think it makes every one of those worse than if you focus on one, right? And like, I think Warren Buffett is a good example of this, right? He invests in handfuls of companies with an enormous amount of money and an enormous opportunity to invest in a bunch of different places. But you just don't see him investing in a bunch of different companies. You see him investing in a handful and going heavy on those. But
they do. Berkshire has a ton of companies.
But I mean, not relative to the amount of money they've invested, you know?
No, but I think they are, I would consider them to be a diversified conglomerate. But where I think the Buffett stuff comes in is that he is not actively managing those businesses.
Fair. Yeah.
And if you are at, like, and that's kind of goes back to where it's like diversifying the passive investments. Like he is buying businesses that operate autonomously, that have a leadership team that's going to stay on through this and just letting them run.
Fair. Yeah.
And when you do that, it's like, if you want to have a holdco and treat it truly as a holding company, that's really the only way to make it work. Because like you're saying, like, if you have to have any operational involvement, you're going to be doing all those businesses a disservice. And so it's like, if you want to diversify, it's got to be passive. And for him, like, where he focuses ruthlessly is really identifying the right businesses to buy and how much to pay for them. And like, he doesn't try to diversify that. He doesn't try to bring in a bunch of people and outsource that and just complete checkout. It's like, no, like, that's his value add. And so he holds on to that and then knows, okay, like, we can't buy all these companies and still have tightly controlled, centrally controlled operations. And that's where, like, so many acquisitions and why, like, most conglomerates, if you look at, like, I mean, if you look at, like, GE and others, like, there's a lot of reasons they failed, but, like, that central control doesn't work when you have a wide set of things that you are controlling.
Yeah. I think when it comes down to it, for a lot of us that are earlier stage, you know, founders, is like, it's fear at the end of the day, right? You are scared of going all in on something, because then if it doesn't work out, there's no reason to say, fuck, like, this didn't, there's no, oh, but I was spending 20% of my time on this other thing, or I was only half time on this or whatever. Like, to say, and like, I'm realizing this, like, fucking just now in the last, like, few weeks, like, 100% of my available time is spent on one thing right now, and that is sales of our services, because it is hands down the best way for us to go from where we are to double our revenue in 12 months. And that's our goal. And it took a year of me dicking around with a bunch of other stuff and making excuses and vanity metrics and cute projects and stuff to say, like, I'm admitting to myself, I'm admitting to our team, and I've made it very vocal. I've admitted to our investors and our advisors, like, I'm only doing this. I'm burning the ships on basically everything else that, like you said, doesn't really matter. And it is probably the gutsiest thing I've done in a long time, because now if it doesn't work out, I don't have the excuse of, oh, I was growing our YouTube channel and I was heavily invested in product. And I mean, we have two enormous features that we haven't marketed yet, because, like, well, we got to market them, and I know, but like, it's just not the top priority for me right now. And I feel pretty good about that, you know, because I know that the absolute opportunity for me is in this thing I'm focusing on, which is sales. And I think that that's probably the psychology behind, you know, the indie hackers who say, I'm going to have a bunch of different businesses all doing 5,000 a month or whatever, is you're scared to really go all in on something. Cause if it doesn't work out, you'll think you're a failure.
Yeah. I think that's a really astute point. And it's, I can take that for granted for sure. And it's sort of like, to, it's tough, because to succeed at gambling, you have to have a lot of self-confidence. Because you are effectively, someone is offering you a bet, which puts you, you basically have, like, negative selection. It depends on what it is. But, like, someone's offering you this bet, they think their side is right. And so you are saying, no, I know more than you, I'm right. And that takes a lot of confidence. And I don't naturally have that. It's like, I hate being wrong. I don't want to look stupid. And so that is where a lot of my, like, micromanagement and perfectionism comes from. Cause it's like, if I'm going to make this bet, whether it's a literal bet or whatever else, it's like, I want it, I need to make sure it's perfect. So, like, it has the smallest likelihood of failing as possible. And that's purely emotional. And I have to kind of, that's where it's been hard to delegate, is it's like, well, like, I can see flaws, I can see things that, like, objectively, okay, if we do it this way, like, it will be better. But it's not taking my own advice, being like, but does that really matter? Like, and sometimes it does, most times it doesn't. And I just have to get more comfortable with the just giving up that control and really like putting myself out there, meaning like having the opportunity to be wrong. And it's like why I think endlessly about a lot of stuff, because it's like, okay, if I write this out and keep thinking through it for hours and hours and hours and hours and weeks, a lot of times I'll be like, okay, like, no, this is just like logically correct. And there might be some things I'm missing, but like, I feel confident enough that like I've worked it through that, like, okay, we can do that. But I don't go with my gut. And I think that does hold me back. But it's, yeah, it's everyone, I'm sure everyone at some level has that fear. And I think it's just, it tilts me so much, like seeing that example on Twitter, because it's so like, it's like mind-bogglingly obvious how much that fear is actually costing. And I think that's the biggest thing that people need to realize. And this is me as well, is like, what is that? The way you think you're diversifying, the way you think you're minimizing risk, but actually you're just kind of pussyfooting around and not like taking a chance. Like, how much is that costing you? And I think I've done a pretty good job of it, but there's still a lot like in the weeds where that's where I still have all those anxieties and all those fears about this. Like, is this really the right thing?
The point is almost back to like the first part that we talked about, is like there are degrees of optimization that you can and kind of need to achieve in your business. And it doesn't have to be that, like we're talking about, you're at 100% removed from the business, or that you're like perfectly tuned with, you know, risk and fear and, you know, commitment to things. Like, I think we're saying maybe these five apps are really not optimized and we're maybe a little further on, and there's probably more space for us to grow. But like, I don't think we need to feel bad about that. Like, being aware of it is important, but like, you don't have to like chastise yourself over it, I don't think.
No, and I'll just do the chastising for you. But yeah, it's, no, but seriously though, it's like, I think that was a good point that you hit on. I was like, why do people, because it's very easy for me, like, this is, I truly still can't, like, it's such a crazy example that like, it still does break my brain a bit, but like, it does come down to that fear. And then when I'm being honest about it, like, yeah, that fear does manifest to me in a lot of other ways. And I think it's why it's always easier to give advice than to kind of to others than to give it to yourself. And I think it's trying to just like take those step backs and reevaluate and figure out how can we focus. And that truly has been what I think has finally gotten me over that hump with delegation, of just being honest with myself. Like, okay, what is the 80-20 of the stuff that I'm doing? Like, what are the things where I really do add value? And then what is the stuff that it needs to get done? And good enough is good enough. And it's tough. It's a bit scary, but
it's super tough.
I feel like making progress here though.
Yeah. And I'll just like maybe wrap this by saying, like, I think this is where a mastermind group or an advisor board or a coach is so valuable, because they are objective and dispassionate and can just see these things and give you at least perspective for you to make the right decision, if not like help you make the right decision. So I think that like, being a founder can be super lonely, especially a solo founder. And if you don't have that support in some way to give you that second set of eyes or a different perspective or someone that's a couple steps ahead of you, like, you got to get that, because otherwise, like, you could be, you could be this 46% of this poll that's wrong, or 43% of this poll that's wrong, and not even know that you're wrong. So like, yeah, no shame in like not knowing at all. And like, I'll say, like, my kind of theme lately is like, how do I make better decisions? I feel like I've made so many bad decisions. And I think that like, just having more good information is a big part of that. And it's hard to do that when you're the only one gathering the data, I guess I'll say. And so like, having other perspectives is really healthy. And like, you can lean on your team to an extent, but at the end of the day, it's you as a founder who's making the decisions. And yeah, I mean, there's a tangent,
I think,
but just like that's a big thing.
I think as far as like decision making goes, is what you see in so many things is like people trying to find rules of thumb and just like abstractions and tactics and things that like do this to get this result without understanding at all how it works and why it works or and when it may not. And on some level, we need to treat most things in our life with that. We don't have the time to kind of go to first principles on everything we do. But the more, I think that is, I have no idea how to like improve these qualities in someone. But it's, I think that is the best thing you can do to improve decision making is get to the root of it, because then you can work through a lot of these things without needing those other external perspectives. And I think external perspective is helpful with a caveat of like, it's got to be a good perspective, because I think we all say that, but I genuinely think most advice out there is bad and is from people who don't think about the first principles. It's like, and they might get close, they might have better and better rules of thumb, but they're still not getting to the root of it. And it's just like, why? I think the obsession over churn, if you're going to obsess over something, that's a pretty good thing to pick, but like not all churn is the same. If you have a ton of unqualified traffic coming in to your site and churning out, your average churn is going to look really bad. And it's like, oh, you're burning through like your entire customer base every 6 months, every year, whatever. And it's like, kind of, but it's like, no, that's not my customer base. And as long as you're not trying to attract those, and as long as you're not obsessed with it, like, that is what it is. Like, focus on the other side of it. And I don't think you hear that advice. And I don't think you come to some of those conclusions without really going to the root of just like, why is diversification good? It's because it can make returns less volatile. Why can it do that? Because if you're placing uncorrelated bets, that doesn't guarantee that your returns are going to be less volatile. It just makes it where instead of flipping one coin and seeing the result, and that's how your results are based, is just on that one flip, you're flipping five coins and three might be heads, two might be tails, whatever. And like, it's going to change either way. But like, that's that lack of correlation is what leads to it. But you might just have five rigged coins. You might just like not be able to, like, they might all be correlated as well. And honestly, for five businesses doing 100K a year, they're correlated to you.
Yeah,
and you are not going to do a good job running them. And I think that's where I think it's finding the good advice, the advice really should be about how to think. And I think that is the missing piece to great decision making. And it's much easier said than done, but like, I think that's what a lot of it comes down to.
Yeah. Love it.
All right.
Cool. Well, it's good to catch up, man. I hope it's not, 3 months until we talk again, but it might be. So
I feel like it's been more than 3 months since we've released. Yeah, I feel like it's been almost, it's got to be six, maybe even a year. I don't know.
Yeah. It's been a hot minute, but for everyone who's listening and still subscribed, thank you. Keep us around. We'll be back at some point in the future when we have, more hot takes and more interesting stuff to catch up on. I think in the meantime, maybe an interesting place to catch up on what's going on with Andy and I is probably on Twitter.
Oh, and you need to, people listening can follow me on Twitter too. I don't really tweet much, but I have like reactivated my account and I had no followers. And I think I made the mistake of, it was like whenever those like very obviously like bot accounts would follow me, I would just like remove them as followers. And I have like 20 followers. And I was like, oh shit, like I should probably have left like some of those, because then it just looks like, who's this dude who has like, how can you only have 20 followers? I'm like, I don't know, because I just kept removing everyone. So I at least need you to follow me, Craig.
All right.
Just for ego's sake. And if anyone's listening, I can't promise I'm going to tweet much, but it would just be nice to get a follow there. So at Andy Baldacci, same as always. But it's good catching up, Craig.
Sounds good.
Talk soon.
All right. Bye, everyone.